This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
I'm Matt, host, but also realtors with Oakwind Realty in downtown Vancouver. So excited for today. We've got Daryl Simpson back on the show. Of course, Daryl's the, force in the real estate world, but president of Townline, which is no stranger to anybody that listens to this show. And past guest fan favorite. So fired up for this one.
Absolutely. It was great having Daryl back on the program. Unvarnished. Straight from the gut.
You got any more there? Unvarnished, straight from the gut.
Unvarnished, straight from the gut. This is,
Doesn't pull any punches.
There's
warts and all. This is... What could you say? We have a pretty frank conversation.
Frank conversation. Definitely tells it like it is. And it's a great conversation for it. So excited to have Daryl back on the show.
Yes. Can't wait for this. Matt, a couple things, housekeeping items. Last week, we had very positive feedback on our RE/MAX survey report.
Yes.
Very good conversation around that. This week, we've got Daryl Simpson.
That's right.
Next week, we're talking about how to get a deal in this market as a buyer. And then the following, we're starting off the fall market. We've got some big guests coming.
Oh, man, we've got them lined up. Yeah, it's going to be a banger September. Let's just put it that way. I don't want to...
Well, perennial guest...
Brendan Augmanson's coming back.
Brendan Augmanson's
coming back. I don't want to release names, but as everyone knows, there were letters released.
Yes.
One by a number of primarily academics on one side and one by the development community.
Right.
On the other, with different ideas of how we need to move forward to build enough housing to get us out of this crisis in British Columbia. And let's just put it this way. We may have our next debate coming up.
Oh, there might be a debate. Oh,
I feel like we've already lined up a couple guests. It's in the works. Dialogue over debate, I'd say, but the fireworks will be there. There's no question. So that's coming up in September and a host of other great guests. So stay tuned.
Yes, can't wait for that. Matt, what do we got before we cut to our conversation with Daryl?
Well, we got our quiz segment. I got another hot one for you, Adam.
Okay.
It's a quiz. It's our quiz section that remains nameless. And here's this week's question.
Can't wait.
And hopefully I say all these. There's a couple words here I'm not sure how to pronounce. So hopefully this works. Thomas Muller will become the highest paid. He's now landed in Vancouver.
Okay.
Thomas Muller will become the highest paid player in Vancouver Whitecaps history in 2026. You're familiar with Thomas Muller?
I am, yes.
Earning about two times more than the previous record holder. However, compared to his Bayern Munich salary, he is still taking approximately what percentage pay cut to come to Vancouver? Ooh. A, 30%.
Yes.
B, 50%. C, 70%. Or D, 90%.
Oh, man. This is tricky.
It is tricky. He's a big deal.
Yeah.
Before we get to that, Adam, I do want to highlight the Zonda Dealmakers event. If you're in the real estate sector here in Vancouver, you're going to want to hear about this and you're going to want to go to this. It's called Vancouver Dealmakers. It's happening Tuesday, September 16th, right in time for the fall market, at the Fairmont Waterfront.
Yeah, Matt, this is a brand new event bringing together the region's top residential housing developers, builders, and capital experts to break down what's really happening in the market, where the deals are happening, and what to expect heading in not only to the fall, but right into 2026. If you listen to this show, you're going to know a lot of the speakers already because there's Neil Crystal, who will be speaking. He's president and CEO, of course, of Polygon Homes. Bo Jarvis, past guest fan, favorite president and CEO of West Group Properties. Cyrus Navabi, who is president of Qualix Landmark. And of course, guests from CBRE, Nicola Wealth, CIBC, and more. So expect a morning packed with market insights, strategic conversations, and of course, there's always great networking opportunities.
So let me get this straight, Adam. You can go hear from the best and brightest in the business,
yes,
and you can network with the best and brightest in the business.
Huge value add for agents as well, like anybody in the industry, but I'm thinking agents for... when you hear people like Neil Crystal or Bo Jarvis or Cyrus and Bobby, like these are people leading the industry, Matt. So
yeah,
like when they talk, you should be listening.
CNBC at the Vancouver Dealmakers event, Tuesday, September 16th. What you want to do, Adam, is you want to get a discount. And the way to do that is you head over to dealmakers.builderonline.com/events/Vancouver or simply Google Vancouver Dealmakers Builder Magazine to register now. Here's the key thing though, Adam. Promo code VREP25. That's VREP25. And that's to save 25% off the ticket prices.
Yeah, spots are filling up fast. So make sure you get your spot today. And yeah, we'll probably see you there. So anyways, Matt, but before we get to our conversation with Daryl, Matt, of course, we got the trivia question.
Oh, right. The answer. Right.
Yes.
So this is Thomas Muller, of course,
a
celebrated football player, soccer player who... is now the highest Vancouver Whitecaps earner in history, but he took a pay cut. Was it 30%, 50%, 70%, or 90% from his Bayern Munich salary last season?
So, Matt, I'm going to go with, oh, man, I have no idea. I'm guessing the Whitecaps can't quite pay what...
He's definitely getting paid less. I can confirm that. But Vancouver's a beautiful city, Adam.
Man, but what percentage beautiful? That's the question. 50% I'm going to go.
50% pay cut. Adam, the answer is 70%.
Oh my.
Which makes me wonder what he's actually doing. Here's the explanation. He's going to be paid $7.5 million, okay, USD. But last year in Europe, he made 20.5 million euros.
Wow.
So 70% difference. Yeah, I don't follow this enough to understand the logic of the move, but it's an exciting time for Vancouver, and it sounds like we got him at a steal.
Wow, that's incredible, really. I mean, it's still a decent, decent year.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he's
he's doing okay.
He'll survive. Yeah, he'll do fine. But he's here, and yeah, we're all excited about it. But maybe we should cut to our talk with something we actually know about, which is real estate with Daryl Simpson, president of Townline.
I love this one. This podcast is sponsored by Atlin at Clayton Crest, a master plan community in the West Clayton area built by Zentera Developments.
Zentera is an absolute force, Adam. They've been nominated for Multifamily Builder of the Year for 10 consecutive years and just won again at the Georgies for 2025 Multifamily Home Builder of the Year.
What's really exciting about Atlin is the West Clayton location. You're within walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, giving you that perfect balance of city access while living in a peaceful, family-friendly community in the Fraser Valley.
And if you have kids or are planning to start a family, there's an on-site daycare where residents get first access. This kind of thoughtful planning is why Zentera's projects stand out in the market.
The amenities at Atlin are incredible too, Matt. A rooftop patio with stunning views, fitness center, co-working space, and lounge areas for events. The outdoor space is extensive with 2 fitness areas, 3 children's play areas, and multiple spots to relax.
With major investments happening in the SkyTrain and the 72nd Avenue extension, West Clayton is set for explosive growth. This is genuinely one of those opportunities to invest in a community before values skyrocket.
And that's really the key here. This isn't just about finding a beautiful place to live. It's about making a smart investment in your future as the whole area continues to develop.
Pre-sales for Atlin will begin soon. Register today at atlincondos.ca. That's atlincondos.ca.
Okay, so we're here with Daryl Simpson. He is the president of Townline and past guest fan favorite. How you doing, Daryl?
I'm great.
Thanks. Thanks for taking the time today. Really appreciate you coming down.
Nice to see you guys again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like an annual thing for me. It's nice to be able to get here and share some ideas.
If it's annual, you should come in the fall because this office is like, we're basically in a sauna here today. So
Yeah, you guys are in shorts and t-shirts and I'm in a blazer and jeans.
Yeah, it's like one of us is a professional.
Thanks a lot.
Maybe for our listeners who are not familiar with you, Daryl, and haven't heard you on the show, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I've been in the business since 93. I spent some time in the brokerage world and went into the development world with Interwest and Intercorp in the mid-90s. Joined the Boza family in late 90s, left, had a great career and run with those guys, left there a couple of years ago, was there for 23 years, left there a couple of years ago and been doing a couple of things since then. And about a year and a half ago, joined Rick Illich and our team at Townline.
I got a question about the 90s. How does this feel? How does this feel in relation to the 90s in your mind? 93 till now, is this how?
What's the average age of your listener? Do you know? Do you have any information? All joking aside, do you know who listens to this thing?
We do.
I know a lot of people, but.
Yeah. I think so. I don't have them in front of me, but I would say most of our listeners fall between the 30 to 50.
Oh, yeah. Probably. Yeah. It's, that is true. Yeah. Not a lot of boomers.
Surprisingly more male than female, I believe.
Yeah. And excuse male.
Yeah.
But it is, I think, increasingly, or at least over the last few years, feels like we have people that are very interested in real estate or in the industry. It's definitely, like, I feel like a lot of people I talk to in the industry are
Imagine a lot of realtors.
Yeah, presumably. A lot of realtors.
Yeah, great. Yeah, anyway, sorry. So your question was the 90s. How does this feel?
Yeah, how does it feel in relation?
So the reason I asked who's listening, because I give a bit of a frame of reference. So the 90s was just, you know, in the middle of and coming, emerging out of the leaky condo crisis, right?
Right.
So do we need to talk about what that was?
Everyone knows
that, right? So that was tough. There was no bid. And there was no bid on new homes. A lot of lack of faith in developers' ability to build what they said they were going to build. Building codes and requirements were changing and a general lack of consumer confidence. But that did go away. And then you had the dot-com boom late in the 90s, around 2000. A lot of immigration, a lot of new people coming to the country from Korea, Iran, certainly Hong Kong, and then mainland China. So you had a whole hundreds of thousands of people coming into the country from other parts of the world that lifted us out of that. This feels, I don't want to sound catastrophic, this feels worse than that, feels more challenging than that. Because right now, I think many of us are trying to figure out what the market looks like in 2 years. Not so much what the market looks like next month. That's really hard to call. But what the market looks like 2 years from now, it's getting tougher and tougher. Yeah. Yeah. So it's different and it feels in some ways a little more challenging. That being said, in 1993, I was 23 and didn't have a clue what was going on. So maybe the people that were 55 in 93 knew exactly what was going to happen in 95. I certainly didn't.
And when you say right now it's getting tougher and tougher to call 2027, 2028, what are the, and maybe this is the whole podcast, but what are the compounding factors that are making that tougher?
I think, well, certainly a declining population, right? So for the first time in Confederation, we will have a population that's lower next year, this year, than last year. It's never happened before. That's a big deal. So household formation, demand for housing is everything in the housing world, right?
Right.
Obviously. So now some people who are listening to this will say, well, that's great because we want house prices to go down. We want fewer people in this country. We want less competition for the housing stock we have. And I can understand that desire and that maybe that concern that some people might have. But over the long term, that's not good for our country, right? We need investment in Canada. We need to be encouraging reasonable, responsible levels of immigration. And that hasn't, you know, that's very uncertain right now. Mm-hmm. That's a whole other maybe podcast, but I'm happy to talk about that. But I would say uncertainty around population growth is an issue. Uncertainty, lack of predictability around government intervention in this industry is a thing now that certainly didn't exist in the 90s, right? So government is involved, like all three levels of government are involved, heavily involved in the creation of a housing unit. You had Bo Jarvis on recently, and I can't do as good a job as he can of articulating all those challenges. He's an incredibly smart guy, really up speed. And I think he did a pretty good job of that. And I'm going to assume that people listening today probably listened to his. But the levers that government is pulling in our business is incredibly, makes it incredibly challenging to predict and project what our investment into this business is going to be over the short and medium term. That makes sense?
Yeah. So it's those. So basically, uncertainty around government and uncertainty around population growth, which can be attributed to government.
Yeah. Yeah. So the lack of demand, let's talk about the condo business for a second. The lack of demand in the condo business right now is a reflection of people's couple of things. The fragility that exists amongst the consuming public for all things that are expensive right now, whether it's cars or real estate. And why is that happening? Well, it's we have some self-inflicted wounds because of some of the government that we've elected. And you've also got what's going on south of the border and all those things, right? And you can't, you know, you can't overstate those things. So that's a challenge. But, you know, in terms of our government here, we've told foreigners, don't invest your money in our country. We don't want you. That's a problem. Should we be opening the floodgates and having unfettered access to our market without some condition and allowing those people to outcompete local people here? No, we shouldn't. But there's got to be a way of finding some sort of happy medium there. I think that's a problem. We've uninvited those guests to this market, and I think over the long term we're going to regret that.
That's interesting that I don't know if we've ever kind of framed it like this, where, you know, we've talked a lot this year about uncertainty created by the tariffs, but we haven't talked so much about the uncertainty created internally, like by our own
100%.
Elected officials, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you think about like population specifically, it seemed so ludicrous that we let in, what, 1 million people in 1 year or however many it was. Like, it was just like an absurd, like, it was like, whose idea was that? It didn't seem to make any sense. And at the same time, then to shut it off, it like 100% also doesn't make any sense. So it's kind of, it's confusing as to who's making these decisions and why. Or not who's making them, but why.
I saw something the other day where there's this theory going around, I don't know how widely, a conspiracy theory, I guess, that Justin Trudeau's intention was to get a Nobel Peace Prize by making Canada open to everybody and allowing unfettered immigration into the country. You know, that's kind of interesting. I don't want to further that. But it's like, okay, well, what were the, you know, why did
yeah, like
that?
what was going on?
That's crazy, right? So yeah. So what I said earlier is moderate, anticipated, stable, increased immigration into our country, I think, is really important.
So we asked this of Bo too, but just thinking of the new federal government and, you know, the shakeup in the in at the provincial level, like, what's your take? Do you think is this like a moment at, say, let's just focus on the federal level, where we're potentially course correcting and, you know, in 2 years we might have a lot more certainty around that with kind of a stable hand?
I do. I'm cautiously optimistic. Listen, clearly Carney's an incredibly intelligent guy. And I think he is going to you know, come to the same conclusion, if he hasn't already come to it, that we need to welcome people into this country, that we need to use more carrots, hopefully not sticks, to promote the development of housing. And we're hearing, you know, positive signs in that direction. I think Gregor Robertson being responsible for the housing portfolio is a positive move, because I certainly don't know the CVs of all the ministers, but I would expect that given his high degree of familiarity with housing in this region, that positions him fairly well to understand the portfolio across the country, and certainly allows him to understand the individual or sort of the more nuanced geographic challenges that we have here. Mm-hmm. Probably, I would think. I think that's a good thing.
Do you think like the investment thesis in Vancouver is broken? Like when I say that, I think about, like, for years we've talked about, well, you know, there's a soft moment, but the market's going to rage back. Like, do you think we're in this moment of, are we still there? Like, is Vancouver always going to be the desirable place, or has like the image of Canada and Vancouver changed?
I think that telling foreign people that they're not welcome to own assets in our country and in this region is a bad idea. And I think we're feeling the effects of that. And I think it may take some time for us to put that behind us in the event that we do put that behind us. So if there's regulatory change again, and we're saying that foreign buyers can buy here, however you need to do X, Y, and Z, buy new product, put it into a rental pool for 5 or 10 years. I don't know. If there's ways, I think, of encouraging investment here that can benefit, that it can result in more housing stock being created without disadvantaging locals the way that perhaps it disadvantaged them in the past. Sorry. So to get back to your question, I do think people who are, I'm sure you have these clients that have a couple of investment condos. They've saved, they've saved and invested. And over time, that's their investment portfolio, or that's the majority of their retirement portfolio. I do think those people are less desirous of owning investment real estate now than they were 3, 4, 5, 10 years ago, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm not crying the blues here when I say this, but it's not easy being a landlord. Like, it's certainly not easy being a tenant either. But if you're a landlord and you have a bad tenant, it's a pretty tough experience. It's not a great experience, right?
There's an easier way to get a return on your money.
Right. Yeah. And in an inflationary environment, when you're losing money and you've got a fixed rate mortgage, you talk to a lot of landlords over the last few years who perhaps were in fixed rate mortgages, it's costing them money to be a landlord, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's going to take a while for those people to forget how painful that's been. But I do remain confident that those people will come back. But it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen overnight because the yields just aren't there. Like if you're buying, you're paying $1,100 a square foot, $1,200 a square foot in Metro Town today, the rents that you're getting there really, they're not providing you with a decent annual return. No. And in fact, if we're honest with ourselves, they haven't for a decade. But people are buying it because they were buying it at $1,350 a square foot in Metro Town, thinking they were going to sell it for $1,450.
Right.
And they were just parlaying a deposit, right? That's really why they were buying. And if they could get some rent over the year or two, great. But they weren't really looking at a return, right? A monthly or an annual return on their invested capital. Whereas now they definitely are. And I think that's money was free, right?
Yeah.
Interest rates were so low for so long that people didn't really think about the value of their equity tied up in something. And now certainly they do. So the numbers have to work. And right now, they don't, right? But they will again, but they don't right now. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm talking about for an individual condo investor.
Yeah, yeah.
And we could talk about being a housing provider in the rental market, such as we are a housing provider in the condo market or townhouse market. Those are different challenges, which I'm happy to talk about. But for the individual investor, I think it's tough to have consumer confidence right now.
For sure.
Right? Let alone confidence in employment income and other investment income, given all the other things we talked about a minute ago with foreign trade and trade imbalances and tariffs and all these other things, right? Every day you wake up, there's a new reason to be anxious about something. So I think that for sure that factors into people's.
And what, like how long in your, so it's, the interesting thing here is, it will make sense again in the future, but 2 years down the line, it's unclear what the market looks like, right? So like how's, maybe I'll put it to you this way. As a president of Townline, how do you navigate this level of uncertainty in the marketplace? Like, do you just shut up shop? Is that
absolutely like, not? We have a huge responsibility to the men and women who come to our office every day and create value for themselves and their families and for us. So, that's my number one priority, right? To continue that, to grow that, in addition to growing the value of the investments that our owners make in the business. So that keeps me. It doesn't keep me awake at night, but it. Well, it has some nights, actually. So for us at Townline, we're a little bit different than a lot of development companies in this region. And what I would also say is that I've stopped calling us a developer and started calling us a housing provider. Developer feels, and I listened to a bit of the Bose podcast that you had on earlier. I think he said he wants to take the word greedy.
Yeah,
I totally agree with that. That being said, there's been a lot of greed in this business over the last, certainly in my career, right? It's been a lot of greed. But it's really just profit taking. It's when the market allows you to make an additional profit, you're going to take it. Of course, you're going to take
right.
it. That gets seen as greed. But anyway, digress. I think of ourselves as housing providers. We provide housing in the non-market space and a significant partner with BC Housing and other players in that world. We develop rental housing, market rental housing, and we develop condominium and townhome product for sale. So we're sort of along that spectrum. That allows us at this point in time to be involved in things that other traditional sort of orthodox development companies don't have the opportunity to play in. So that's a great hedge for a very challenging time. And so we're investing more time, more resources into those relationships in the non-market world to allow us to get that work. I mean, that's lower significantly lower margin work, basically fee for service work now, but it allows us to participate in that part of the housing spectrum, which makes us feel good. And it allows us to keep people employed and working and keep hammer swinging. So that's
do you see that, like, from a business standpoint, do you see that area as a growth area for Townline? Like, I saw a headline this morning and I didn't really read it, but it was something about the federal government creating some sort of new agency, Canada Builds, or whatever it's called. Yeah. Is that something that you're looking at? Like, okay, this is the next 5 years potentially.
For sure. But I mean, before Liberals formed another government, in fact, I think if you went back and listened to, not that you're going to do this because you're busy guys, but because I did this yesterday, I listened to the podcast I did a year and a half ago here, So I'm like, oh my God, what did I say last year?
Oh my God.
And what did we say? Well, yeah. So I wanted to, like, how dumb do I look now? Anyways, what was the question again?
about the growth in that non-market space, basically.
Yeah, it's something that we've been intentional about investing in and wanting to be present in for a long time, certainly for Rick Illich and for Townline and for me now, for sure. It's an area that we very much need. So we're looking at projects in South Island. We've been looking at projects in the interior of BC. We're looking at a lot of projects here and trying to partner with BC Housing and other people to make that happen. So for sure.
What about market rental?
We have a handful of large market rental projects in our portfolio, land that we own that we are trying to get into position of putting a shovel in the ground. For the most part, those are still undergoing approvals right now. But that's challenging too. It's not easy, and it's never been easy. But there's still so many ways that government is involved in tinkering around the edges to ensure that we don't make any money.
Right.
And therefore, we're not going to put a shovel in the ground, right? So we're fortunate that our acquisitions guys and team bought our land quite well. So I think we're a little bit better than most in some cases, but rents have moderated over the last year. They've softened. They are softening right now. And what we don't know is where that's going to end. So rents have come off a little bit, but we know that rents in 4 or 5 years when those projects are complete, if we can finance them and if we can attract the capital required and the amount of equity required to get the shovels in the ground, we know that those are going to be, that we'll be glad we did. We know that rents in 2029 and 2030 are going to justify the expense today. But right now, rents are a little soft. So, and softening.
And does Townline retain those buildings or do they sell them?
Sometimes either or.
Yeah.
Okay. Most of our buildings, we retain an interest. Yeah. The overwhelming majority of those buildings, we retain an interest. And because we're a fully integrated firm, we do property management, rental management, all that as well. So we like to stay in the building. We like to steward that asset over the long term. We don't really want to give that up to somebody else.
Right.
So, yeah.
Daryl, you came in. You didn't come in. You shot us a text and you said, I think I should pull it up, but I'll give you the gist. Hey,
these are private text messages.
What's going on?
No, he basically said, "Hey, I think you might have said I'm pissed off," and you didn't express what you're pissed off about.
You're like, oh shoot, why is Daryl mad at me?
Yeah, I know. He's like, what are you pissed off about?
I'm not pissed off about anything today. It's a good reminder to not send texts to people I like saying I'm pissed off. You know, I feel like we need to create access to housing in this region for people for whom it's challenging. Okay. We need to find a way to do that. But we're tinkering around the edges. The reality is all levels of government contribute about, depending on who you believe, somewhere between 30 and 40% of the cost of delivering a new home. I'm going to say it's 35%. Okay. Government needs to be out of the housing business. And I think what we as an industry have been loath to say over the last decade or so is that government has very much been in the housing business. The amount of money that governments have extracted from this process and therefore layered on to the consuming public is incredible. And so when we hear about greedy developer, it bothers me. Because I'm very proud of what we do. I'm very proud to be a housing provider. I'm very proud that we employ hundreds of people at family-supporting wages. And I'm very proud of the fact that our business contributes close to 20% of our provincial GDP. There are times when there have been outsized profits in this business because the markets allowed us to do that, as we talked about earlier. What's happened, though, is that over time, we as an industry have allowed government to just take a little bit more here, take a little bit more there, add a little here, add a little there. And all of a sudden, we woke up and we're like, holy crap, government's taking a third. Mm-hmm. It's not so much that they're taking. They're not taking it from us. They're taking it from our tenants and they're taking it from our home buyers. And so then you think, well, where's all this money gone? Like, where is all this? Where is this public goodwill? Do we feel like, are the streets cleaner? Are the boulevards nicer? Do you feel more comfortable walking along the street today than you felt a couple years? Now I sound like a politician. I don't want to come across that way. Yeah. I'm not campaigning for anything. Right? Yeah. But I think, God, like it's crazy. So the quality of life, I would argue, is deteriorating at a time when governments have had their hand out and in the pockets of the people that have needed the housing. We as an industry are cast as the villains. And it's quite frankly, it's pretty easy for government to create housing affordability. Get out of the way. Like, get out of it.
Yeah.
That's what bothers me. Get out of it. That may not have been what pissed me off that day, but it does bother me. Like, yeah. City of Vancouver, I think, in the last 10 years have collected like well in excess of $500 million in CAC revenue. Okay? Does your street feel safer? Does your garbage is your garbage and recycling collected more often?
Oh, that's
is
a
the boulevard
sore spot.
Cleaner, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I when I hear myself talk in these headphones you've got on me, yeah. I sound like a grumpy old man, and I don't want to be that way.
But it's not a sexy campaign, right? Like we fixed housing by getting out of the way. Like
yeah,
like that's not a very like it.
Exactly. Yeah, I think you're right.
It's very tough. Right. Yeah,
I think you're 100% right. But like, you know, deferring DCLs, CACs, like allowing developers to split them up and a third now, a third later. Okay, of course that's helpful.
Yeah.
Decreasing hydro connection fees. And okay, of course that's helpful. But we're just like, we're not. Remember Succession? You guys watch Succession?
Oh, yeah.
You like Succession? Remember when Logan Roy, in like one of the last episodes, he's getting mad at his kids and he's like, you're not serious people.
Well, I think that's good. Like that's the best line of the show.
It's the best. Yeah. You're not serious people.
You are not serious.
Looking at them
people.
Like, what the hell are we talking
yeah.
about?
Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of feel that way sometimes. I feel that way sometimes. I feel like the solutions are easier than a lot of, you know, many levels of government want us to believe they are. And that the challenge is in rolling that out. If there was a national housing czar, and he pulled together all the provinces and all the mayors of major metropolitan cities and said, we want to get that number from 35% to zero in the next 2 years. Come back, figure out how you're going to do it. And let's assume that they were able to figure out how they were going to balance their budgets and make transparent to all their other property tax owners how expensive it is to actually run a city. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
Right? Imagine they were able to do that. How do you feather that into the housing supply industry? Because if I bought a site a couple of years ago and I broke ground on it today, and tomorrow you tell me, good news, developer B, we've just saved. Okay, that's really difficult to do and well beyond my pay grade, but that's what needs to happen. People who are smarter than me, housing economists, Nobel Prize winning. Do they give a Nobel Prize for economists?
I think they do.
Of course.
They do.
Okay, so somebody like that needs to figure out how do we do that? We need to take this massive amount of cost and decouple it from the creation of a housing unit and start again. And I think all this other stuff is making us feel good. It's important. I don't want to take away. I guess I am taking away from it. I don't want to take too much away from that. But like, we're not serious about this.
Yeah.
If we were really serious about it and we were really clear about what the objective is, we want to make housing more accessible and more affordable to people. How do you do that? How do you make housing more affordable? There's only, Well, for the longest time, I always thought there was two ways, but there's actually a third. But there's primarily two ways of making housing more affordable. One, you create growth in income relative to the cost of housing so that people can afford it. We as a country and we as a province are not very good at that. Like, we're not very good at growing an economy and creating increased wages for people, right? We're not. We're really not. I'm looking for nods from you guys. You're nodding. Yeah.
No, I'm the tracks are of my tears are streaming down my face as
Think we're not very good at that, right? And so we need to get back to that. We need to get back to growing our economy so that as real estate appreciates in value at a moderate pace, which is good for everybody, again, keywords being moderate, as real estate appreciates at a moderate pace, people can keep step with that. But the reality is people haven't been able to do that. Mm-hmm. So we need to grow the economy and grow value for and grow real incomes for people. That's proven really difficult. The other way you create housing affordability is to make it cheaper. And the reality is that real estate is cheaper today than it was a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. So mission accomplished to a degree for the provincial and federal government, right? They've made it cheaper. They've depressed the market, right?
But it's still, but so real estate's cheaper.
If it exists.
And also, I'm just thinking there's still somebody goes through a presentation center and goes, okay, I can't afford this. There's still, I guess, with the interest rates at where they are, there's a disconnect between, or a cost of, what does Bo call it? A cost of delivery crisis. But so I guess I'm just thinking, is the answer then is that 35%, which is what we kind of talked to Bo about. Like, I mean, that's the...
If the presentation center exists, that developer that paid to build that presentation center is burdened by all of those extractions and cost inputs, right? And you can't, as I said earlier, really difficult to decouple that. But that's what needs to happen in some way. Unless there's a certain amount of profit available in that deal for a developer, it can't get financed anyways. The banks aren't going to look at it, right? So they're not going to give you a construction loan unless you've got a certain amount of pre-sales at a certain value that covers a certain percentage of your total costs, right?
I'm just thinking back to the greedy government idea. And I mean, I think because it was one of the things I was thinking about over the last week or so was just what would happen to property taxes if these CACs went away. And this is like the biggest challenge, right? Because you think about like, it kind of reminds me of property taxes in commercial spaces.
Yep.
Like how they've just been cranking them up. And it's like, well, no one's going to, the world's smallest violin for the guy who owns the commercial building who's paying an exorbitant amount of money every year annually for property taxes. But the second you do any kind of percentage increase in for...
You lose elections.
Well, you lose elections, right? I mean, and we have low property taxes for the country, right? So
where I thought you were going with that is the distinction between being a commercial property owner and a residential property owner being governed by the Residential Tenancy Act. And a commercial property owner is taking that tax increase and passing it along to the butcher and the
triple
baker.
Triple net, right? Yeah, exactly.
In residential, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. So...
Yeah, no, sorry. And you're right. But I think more so what I was kind of getting at is it's easy to tax, like the narrative around greedy developer, like it supports is let's tax the heck out of the, like politically, people don't really care if developers are getting taxed.
No, but I think the fundamental problem there is that it's like, you know, people are learning this with tariffs in the States. The people that pay the tariff is the consumer.
Sure.
The people that pay the extractions for the cost of creating housing are the renter or the condominium owner.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just clear as day, right?
Yeah.
And if those taxes were to go, if those cost inputs were to go away and they were to spread all of that forsaken, quote unquote, revenue, okay, or value, and they're put that back to people that are paying property taxes, there'd be a mob in the streets, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's just it.
But that's the part where it's hard to think how this plays out.
How it changes.
Yeah, how it changes, right? Because there's literally zero political motivation to say, you know what we're going to do? We're going to take away all the community amenity and the DCCs and we're going to put it on existing property owners, a large percentage who are probably not in my backyard folks anyway. Like, and it's like, okay, we're going to build there's a tower going up. Like I'm just thinking in our neighborhood where the towers are going up at Broadway SkyTrain, which makes a lot of sense in my mind, but there's, you know, people are really concerned. And I think if you, you know, not only are you making moves like that, but then you're saying also your property taxes are going up. Like, I don't even know what the percentage would be like in order to get offset that. That would be.
But that would be an interesting project for somebody in Sauder, right?
Yeah.
Get Sir Somerville to give it to his students and say, okay, if we extracted this amount of cost out of the system and had to burden property tax payers with it, what would that be? And how angry would people be? Very angry.
Yeah, very angry. I mean, you would not, your political career would be over.
I think the other thing is there's been a lot of time spent in the last number of decades vilifying developers. Mm. And so it's very difficult to, it's very difficult to tell people, just kidding, they weren't that bad. We need them and they're a partner in the solution.
That's right.
It's difficult to do that, right? So it's, to your point, it's sort of politically untenable or unsaleable, but let's have an honest conversation about what's really going on, right?
But I mean, 35 to 40% going to the government's just, there's got to be a better way. I mean, these fees have to be reduced.
Yeah. Think about it. We tax alcohol and tobacco, things we're trying to dissuade people from consuming because we're trying to dissuade people from consuming it.
Yeah.
And housing, we're trying to encourage it and trying to stimulate it. And we do the same thing.
Right.
Makes no sense. Right.
So then, I guess I'm just, and maybe there's no kind of, I'm just trying to see the pathway forward here, right? Because, you know, at the start you said, we're going to get back to a place where, you know, and who knows when, but we're going to get back to a place where, you know, a mom and pop investor buy a condo and kind of the numbers probably work out a little better than they do now at some point. And it's going to be, you know, old school real estate investing with current costs, current taxes on housing and the political climate that makes it almost impossible to change. Like, how do we get there? And I don't know if this is an answerable question.
Well, but I think we have to have a reasonable amount of immigration. We have to have a reasonable amount of population growth in the country. We have to create a country that people feel comfortable investing in, not just investing in real estate, investing in all sorts, in all sectors. And people don't do that. Certainly with the Trudeau government, right? People were not investing in this country, right? People, certainly the foreign investment in this country fell through the floor, right? I spoke to UDI at the start of the year at the annual housing forecast lunch, and I was doing a little bit of research around that. And used to be, I'm going to get this slightly wrong, but it used to be like 10 years ago, about 50% of the Canada pension plan was invested domestically. 50.
Yeah.
Okay. Half of it internationally. Do you know where I'm going with this?
Yeah, this is going to be a terrible stat, but yeah, go on.
Okay, so it used to be that we invested half of our Canada pension plan dollars in Canada, believed in our country, and half of it outside. Now it's 1/5. We invest 15% of Canada pension plan dollars in the country, and 85% of them are outside of the country. So no, these are independent people that are, their job is to steward that money and grow that for the benefit of Canadians, right? They have a duty to do that. And let's assume they're doing a great job.
Right.
What does that tell you? That's a problem, right? That's a problem.
They're not seeing the opportunities.
No. So we need to create those opportunities. I guess back to your question.
Right.
We need to create those opportunities. We need to create job and income growth. I think we need to get serious about public safety and addiction and homelessness and mental health and incarceration and our legal system. That's another podcast, but it's not, certainly not my area of expertise, but we need to make people feel more comfortable living in urban environments again.
How in your mind, Daryl, is a public safety and maybe a public safety, well, some people wouldn't call it a crisis, but how is that impacting the city and the environment?
Everyone's calling it a crisis, aren't they?
Yeah. I think it is, isn't it?
It's a crisis.
Okay, I'll call it a crisis.
A friend of mine is the CEO of a very well-known charity that takes care of disadvantaged and homeless youth in BC. And she said the other day, which I thought was incredibly sort of remarkable, she said, if every other month a 747 full of 400 people crash landed at YVR, and it just happened, it just kept happening. Every other month, 400 people died. We would be all over that and we'd find a problem. We'd solve that problem. Mm-hmm, we'd figure it out. But we have the equivalent of that in BC, right? Like 200 people a month dying, drug, when are we, it's back to my other con. Are we serious people? Like, what the hell
yeah.
are we doing?
Yeah.
How is
yeah.
that okay? It pisses me off. It really pisses me off, actually.
Like, it's also, you know, and this is a ChatGPT and Europe related. I went to Europe and I was walking around and I was like, man, they just don't have the open air drug markets. Like, that's just not a thing.
No.
So ChatGPT, I was like, what's the, you know, give me the history of how this, I can't remember the answer. But it's like, why? This is a great story. Why? Just read your ChatGPT. Why? But you know, it's not
3 kilowatts of energy trying to get a question.
Yeah, exactly. In any event, though, it's obviously a West Coast issue primarily. Why is this? This is insane. And it's not happening in other places.
No.
And if you took somebody, transported them from, you know, where I was in Europe and put them here, their heads would explode. Yes. Like, what as is they, going on?
As they should.
Yeah.
And I think this is a bit of the boiling frog thing for us too, right?
Yeah.
They
yeah.
should for us too. It's disgraceful. Yeah. I think part of the problem, again, like, I'm a real estate guy here talking about public health and addiction, and I shouldn't be. But none of us should be talking about this,
no,
right?
Yeah, no, none of us.
But I think where it sort of, where it comes home to roost in our business is, I think it often gets a lot, I think Bo talked about this actually, if I'm not mistaken. A lot of problems get put at the feet of housing. Is it a housing, is our addiction issue in this part of the country a housing problem? For some people, it certainly is.
Right.
Is it a mental health problem? For some people, it certainly is. Is it an addiction problem? For some people, it certainly is. And for some people, it's all of that. But I think it gets masked. Do we need to do a better job of providing housing for people that need it and can't provide the housing for themselves? 1,000%. Is our addiction and criminal justice problem here a housing problem? I don't think it can be, can it?
No.
And people get frustrated, rightfully so, when you use, like, because I've just seen on Reddit and stuff where somebody will say, you know, there's a homeless person shooting up. And, you know, but it's like almost interchangeable, this idea of addiction and unhoused.
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean? Where it's almost like we've now lumped
yes.
different.
If he was just, crises. If we just had a house, then he wouldn't be injecting drugs.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
Might be. It might help on the margin, but it's not going to solve that problem. And right.
It is. It gets very, very cloudy.
Well, there's all these stories now, right? Last week, my son was driving to work and came across this. He called me at the end of the day and we talked at the end of the day. How's work? That was good, Daddy. That was good. Well, I saw my first dead body. First dead body. Like, what? Are you okay? Yeah. No, I'm okay. I'm all right. I'm like, are you sure, man? Like, you're bringing it up to me. So you're telling me you saw a dead body today. You're 19 years old. In my world, that's a very big deal.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I'm okay. I'm all right. I'm like, Jesus, I'm not. Like,
yeah.
So how many people who live in downtown Vancouver or in urban environments could say they've done that? Probably more than you think.
Mm-hmm.
How many people have you walked past on the street that you just hope are sleeping that may not be, right? Like, it's terrifying. I don't know. It was probably that level of thinking that caused me to be, when we were texting, to say I'm pissed off. Maybe it was that. I don't know. But terrible. I mean, like, your heart goes out to the people who have that problem, who have made a bad choice to take a drug recreationally or whatever, and now they're addicted to it. That's terrifying and tragic and awful. We need to fix that. We need to find ways of giving them housing so they can get back on their feet. We need to have treatment in place for these people and not all this tokenism sort of BS, which I feel like a lot of it's tokenism BS. Think about how we mobilized around COVID. Like, what government could really do around COVID? Like, shut the whole province down, shut schools down, took over parking lots at Vancouver Community College, administered shots. That's another podcast, triaged around that, right? Did we do all the right things? Probably not. Did a whole bunch of the wrong things? Yeah, probably.
The ability to mobilize.
We swarmed it, right? Yeah. What are we doing with this? And the reality is, roughly 200 people a month are dying for this, and it's having a detrimental effect on those people's lives and their families' lives, obviously, and it's having a knock-on detrimental effect to a number of other people, business owners, employees, students.
Well, I was just going to say,
trying to make their way in life.
Anecdotally, I don't think I said this on the podcast, but I was talking with an old client of mine who's not from Canada, came to Vancouver in 2011, 2012, tech guy. Land of milk and honey, you know, he loves it. Oh my God. And he's leaving. And his comment was, he said somebody tried to stab him downtown, you know, and I was like, oh, He's like, yeah, I'm done. And yeah. I'm like, man, that feels like the last 15 years to me. It was like this sort of upward trajectory where the sky was the limit. And somehow it's come to this point where, you know, guys that were in on that, that came 15 years ago from all over the world are like, no, this is, you know, it was a good run, but we're done.
Yeah.
And that's a sad spot to be in.
Again, the worst part of this problem is the people who fall victim to it.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of collateral damage.
Yeah, this is, I'm talking kind
of. I know, of course. Yeah. But there's a lot of collateral damage around that we tend to not really acknowledge as much. And that's, that's one of them. We had one of our safety officers on one of our sites last year. He narcanned eight or nine people on a construction site that would happen to be in an area that was, you know, a bit of a challenging area. This guy came to work every morning wanting to administer first aid to construction. You know, sorry, he didn't want to administer first aid, but in the event that he
that
had
was
to,
his job.
Yeah, his job is to keep people safe on a construction site. And he's there, he's narcanning people on the street, trying to, and bring people back to life. And you know, that took a toll on him. It's terrible, right? Anyways, have we built a jail cell in this country in the last 10 years to be able to deal with drug dealers? I don't know. I mean, we're going all over the place right now, but I actually tried to find that out one day. I went into a bit of a rabbit hole one night. I'm like trying to, I looked at incarceration rates and the best I could tell, we haven't built a net new jail cell in this country in like 10 years. Again, I'm not like a harsh, like, you know, militarize the police guy, but we have a problem with like our criminal justice system is probably not functioning all that well. And I'm not that comfortable with it. I don't know it, but I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
That it's probably
it
not
feels
working,
that way.
Right?
It feels
probably
that way.
That well. So do we have jail cells to put people? Do we have enough judges? Do we have enough courts and court time to be able to prosecute people? Can we pull people in remand after they get arrested? Like all those things that contribute to this problem. I don't know. I feel like, again, we're not, there's so many serious people working in it every day, giving so much of their lives to try and make it better. Notwithstanding that, it feels like it's not getting any better.
Yeah.
And your heart goes out to those people, right? The first responder, my nephew is a police officer, dealing with this stuff, hearing some of the stories that he's able to tell. He doesn't tell me much because it's confidential, but, you know, hearing these stories is just heart-wrenching. It's awful. Anyway. So it makes the business of creating housing a really happy, gratifying business, right? To take it back to this. But
yeah.
But I do think I think more of us need to be upset about the fact that we're not making enough traction here.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
Hi, I'm Michael Yu.
And I'm Morgan Brown. And we're the founders of Oakland Realty. We have 9 offices across British Columbia.
Serving all major markets of BC. If you're an agent out there, just like Adam and Matt, who happen to be licensed at Oakwin, please reach out to us at oakwin.com/join and type into that message box, the rep, and you'll receive a free gift and a promotion when you meet one of our leaders.
Thanks so much. And we're looking forward to meeting with you.
See you soon.
All right, Daryl, on that challenging note, let's lighten it up a bit with a little real estate gossip here.
Uh-oh.
Daryl, in real estate, and this is Adam's question, but I'll ask it. In real estate, they say buy the rumor and sell the news.
Oh.
Have you heard that?
Yeah, I have heard that, but I haven't heard it attributed to real estate so much.
Oh, really? Yeah. Adam might be the guy who attributed
buy
it to
rumor,
real estate.
Sell the
in real estate, they say buy the rumor and sell the news. What's the rumor
something
you know, you're like, monitoring or thinking about that may impact our market?
I have nothing to offer there. Are you digging for like some dirt or something? No, I don't know.
I'm not digging for anything. That's Matt. you wrote the question.
Well,
Some sort of market tidbit that somebody can think about. Maybe,
well, for example,
areas of interest, areas of opportunity.
Here's an example. There's gossip that you know, like the LRT line is coming in Langley or something like that.
Oh.
And then by the time it actually hits the papers and it's confirmed and it's all there,
it's been around.
You're selling.
Right. Right.
Do you know what I mean? So you buy on the rumor and you sell on the news. Maybe it's not the right question.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that specifically, but let me say this. I think not to be too down.
Yeah.
But the markets I do think the market's gonna get a little worse before it gets better. Okay. And so let's not be too alarmed about that. Like there's a lot of inventory in the market.
Yeah.
More inventory than we've had ever in my career. And when I say inventory, I mean standing inventory of new homes. Okay. There's a lot of inventory there that's got to work its way through the system and it will. But I don't know if it's whether it's rumored or the truth is that we're going to have to work through that inventory until and once we work that inventory, then the new home market can start to build itself up again. I would say, you know, we spent so much time, we as an industry spent so much time, there's been so much attention paid to rental in the last few years, number of years. That's going to change at some point. The condo market will come back. It's going to be a little while. I think it's going to be a little longer than people think, but people will be very happy that they bought condos down. Didn't you guys say it last week? Yeah. People are very happy that they bought condos downtown for $1,000 a square foot.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
So let's say this started what, mid 2022. So we're kind of three years in to this downturn, would you say?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, it was white hot in 21.
Yeah.
Bled into 22.
But then interest rates started going up.
For sure.
Okay. So we're three years in.
Well, the reality is, go back 10 years. Go back to 2015. Market was surging. Market was awesome.
Yeah.
I'm thinking new home market, not so much your guy, like resale market, but pre-sale, new home market.
But it was busy. 2015 was busy.
Very busy. Yeah. Yeah. 2015 was good. 2016 was good. 2017, 18. Now you get foreign buyer's tax first comes in. Market starts to come off. The market came off quite a bit, if you remember. Yeah. 2018, 19. Then COVID hit. Completely froze the market.
And then
COVID unthawed. What's the right word there? Yeah. The market popped in 21, exploded. Never been hotter in my career. That there was 9 months there where anything sold at kind of any price, and all things that go up must correct at some point. And so you're right. It's been a couple of years.
We've been 3 years. What do you think it's another three? Because we talked. We haven't. Well, I think by the time this comes out, we'll have released Ben Myers, who we've talked to, Open Consulting in Toronto. Okay. Anyway,
an analyst.
He was saying 2028. Is when he's but Toronto's in a worse spot than Vancouver. Yeah,
absolutely. You know what is interesting? I've found in the last year that often the investors in large rental projects here are institutional capital, right? Pension funds from, let's call it, back east. Right? Mm-hmm. Toronto is so challenging right now that they're looking to Vancouver. Relatively speaking, we actually look very good. So even though the market's not great, even though rental projects are tough to pencil right now, I think the general belief is that Vancouver will recover much quicker than Toronto, and they still have capital they need to find a yield for.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And I think you're going to see that Toronto. I mean, I hope it's not the case, but I think Toronto is going to be in a longer valley than we are. Got a lot more inventory to work through. They have default rates on condominium projects that are higher than most people would expect. Presumably, he may have talked about that a bit.
Yeah.
And our default rates here in Vancouver are very, very low for a whole bunch of reasons. We take higher deposits here. It's one of them. So there's more glue in that pre-sale contract. But anyway, I think there's going to be a longer valley there. And during that time, they have capital that they need to deploy that needs to find a yield. And I think you're going to find that investment into Vancouver comes a little earlier. It's earlier than it would be coming back there. That's a bright spot for sure.
I've been
because they're looking. Sorry.
No, not to interrupt, but I've been thinking about that because I mean I feel like a lot of people are building market rental or at least putting in proposals thinking about market rental. But that's actually good to hear that there's more institutional money potentially coming. Yep. Will that offset the amount of inventory that's coming on? Because presumably a lot of people are building this to sell. To an institution, I would think. I wonder what happens with supply and demand for...
I think we're oversupplied right now. I think it will be that way for a while. I don't want to... The next year or two, it's going to feel like we have more supply than we thought we had. Very few projects are going to start this year and next, both rental and condo. And in 29, 30, we're going to be undersupplied again. And so maybe when we first started talking, we're talking, carrots and sticks and government intervening and then pulling out. But I think they just need to get out of the way and let the free market understand those risks and accept those risks and work around them. But anyway.
But so if there's a supply crunch in 2029, that's like a 6 year. So that's a pretty deep trough.
Well, I think we're going to be. Oversupply. I don't think we're oversupplied. Yeah, we're oversupplied right now with affordable supply. Right, got a lot of rental apartments that need $5 a square foot or $5.50 a square foot in rent. That's one thing. But we're undersupplied in $4 a square foot, $4.50 a square foot rents. we're slightly oversupplied in $5 foot rents. And those, that's because the cost inputs for all those projects demand that. Okay?
How does that work? So if you can't rent those, especially in the city of Vancouver, because there's an empty homes tax, right? How does that work? I mean, I don't know if
Some point, a developer would be compelled. They're going to do that sensitivity analysis and say, I'm better off to just rent it at $2,500 a month instead of $2,900 a month and get it rented. At some point, that'll happen for some people that are in a pinch.
But that could take a long time. And I've heard you say before, I think it's something along the lines of like rental doesn't equate to affordable.
Yeah, I've said that for a long time. We conflate affordability with rental and rental with affordability, and it doesn't always work that way.
Doesn't always work that way.
A landlord's going to charge presumably what they can. Now, if your tenant's not turning over, you can't increase the rent, right? But for sure, they're not the same thing. I think you're going to, back to your question a few minutes ago about the truth, and I don't know if it's a rumor or not.
Buy the rumor and sell the news.
Sure, whatever.
We're striking that from
trying to validate your question.
I just read these. I don't write them.
Really? He's the brains of the operation?
He's the brains
of
the
operation. Yeah. Right. I'm ChatGPT.
Okay. There's been so much attention paid to rental in the last number of years. I think you're going to find developers going back to this city and say, rental doesn't work and it's likely not going to work. And I know we wanted to build rental and you wanted to build rental, but the only way for us to move this forward is to try and find a market in condo and go there. Because the amount of equity required to build a rental tower is significantly higher. And if there's any modulation or moderation of federal government money through CMHC programs into the rental market, that'll push developers to go the condo route. Because so much supply has been created under these, incredibly attractive, lucrative, beneficial programs that CMHC has had in place over the last couple of years. So if that moderates at all under Carney, and I have no information to suggest that it would, but if it were to, that coupled with the amount of equity required to build an apartment building, I think you might find developers trying to find a way to unlock that project. And one of those ways may be to pivot back to condo.
It's interesting. And I was thinking about this earlier, and I don't know if we talked about it, but the Vancouver thesis or so, or like what often happens is it seems like we've been in this loop for a very long time where the market maybe softens. We don't create as much inventory. We're always kind of lagging behind on inventory. And then we see a demand shock and then everything goes crazy. We see a huge run up in the market.
Yeah.
And then we see maybe the market soften like something like we're in now, and we see a lot of housing is not created, right? Mm-hmm. The only thing difference now is the investors have like all but left the building. So do we need can a demand shock happen without the investors? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because everyone's saying, well, we're going to be so undersupplied in 2029, but like,
and those run up in
what percentage of the market was investors absorbing that condo stock? And how do we get them back? Or
Well, the investors bought because they believed there was a tenant in 4 years for that unit.
Right.
Right. So investors will buy when they believe that we have a responsible approach to immigration in the country and we're continuing to welcome the right people back into our country. Mm-hmm. Right. That'll cause them to get off the sidelines. If mortgage rates come down a bit, right, and create a little bit more value there, that'll happen. If we lift our restrictions somehow, moderate our restrictions somehow on foreign ownership and allow foreign buyers to buy here, provided that they buy new real estate in underserved areas, maybe, right? But that would, and if they put it into a rental pool, for example, I think that'll stimulate investment activity. And a belief that we as a country in 29 and 2030 are going to be performing better than we're performing now. Mm-hmm. That we're back to where we were 5, 6, 7 years ago, where we're the darling of the G7. And sorry, I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know. I'm sure we weren't the darling of the G7.
Right. But we're in a better spot.
In a better spot, today. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
So assuming, we have this question about, you have a niece looking for, investment-minded niece looking for a place. Just with the kind of situation you've described here, and prefacing it with nobody can ever time the bottom, would you tell your niece to buy today?
If she was just starting right now, like if she was fully up to speed on what she wanted, what she could afford, like if she was fully informed, I think that, and I probably said this to you before, if you're buying for the short term, good luck.
Yeah.
If you're buying for the long term, it'll all be fine. you're buying for the medium term, there may be times when you feel like, oh, I bought too early. As long as you're investing in real estate for the medium to long term, it'll all be fine. And I think buying now is a perfectly okay. Like it'll be okay. That didn't sound very good, did it? It's perfectly okay. I mean, like,
well, it's the best time to buy in the last 5 years.
No one can time the bottom. Yeah. No one can time the bottom of the market. I spent a few minutes earlier saying, I think it's going to get a little more challenging before it gets better. And I believe that. But if you really, what I also believe to be true is that the best product and the best value and the best deals get bought up first.
Yeah.
So I suspect that anybody buying real estate that's going to hold it for 10 years, if they buy it this fall, they're going to be very happy they did. No question. No question. If they want to sell it in a year,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
But you shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't be buying real estate.
No.
Like we're buying Bitcoin. I'm not buying, you know.
I don't think we've ever asked this question. I won't put it to... Is Townline excited about acquiring sites right now? Or is that confidential? I don't know.
No, I'm happy to talk. I mean, we are looking at a lot as developers of our size and scale and breadth are. It's very difficult. It's very difficult to make sense of a commercial listing right now. It's very difficult to make sense. There are a fair number of distressed properties throughout Metro Vancouver with lenders who are involved that... you know, those are active and we're certainly looking at those. But a retail development play right now is hard to pencil for all the reasons I talked about earlier.
Yeah.
I don't know where foreign buyers are going to be and I don't know if we're going to allow them in 2 years. I don't know what government policy will be in place or not be in place in 2 years. It's really difficult. Like, I think I used the story last year. Like, are Airbnbs going to be allowed in Metro Vancouver in 5 years? Probably not. Or will they be? I don't know. Like, anyway, so the amount of intervention that government has in the business mm-hmm. of providing housing makes it really difficult to project and anticipate what our cost base is going to be 2 or 3 years out. So we're looking, but it's really difficult to make sense of things right now.
Daryl, we have this segment called the Five Wire, Five Lighthearted Questions.
Finished already? Yeah. You're getting sick of my downers.
It's blowing. We're already past an hour. An hour.
Is that all
minutes.
This thing is? I thought it was longer than that.
No, that's the Joe Rogan experience.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We're trying to keep ours. We're like a sitcom. 22
yeah.
minutes.
Yeah, this has been a great sitcom.
This podcast is sponsored by Jethro Condos in downtown Langley. Over 100 homes under $425,000 with one-bedroom suites starting at $399,900.
Here's what's incredible, Adam. These condos actually cash flow. When's the last time we could say that about new construction in the Lower Mainland? With these entry-level prices, the numbers actually work for investors.
And you're in the heart of downtown Langley, surrounded by trendy cafes, artisan bakeries, and parks. The area is experiencing incredible growth and new development.
Yeah, the location is absolutely key. Jethro is steps from the future Langley SkyTrain station. Get in before that transit connection transforms the area. Because once that SkyTrain arrives, you're looking at direct connections across the Lower Mainland.
Jethro is a Whitetail Homes project. Whitetail Homes has over 25 years of experience with quality construction and finishes that exceed expectations. We're talking vibrant interiors, expansive windows, and thoughtful design.
For realtors listening, they are offering amazing cooperative incentives. This is a rare opportunity where the fundamentals make sense. Affordable entry, cash flow potential, and positioned for major transit infrastructure in all around win.
Register at jethrocondos.ca. That's Jethro condos.ca.
Jethro Condos, distinctly Langley, uniquely yours.
Question number one, one book that you've read recently that you'd recommend?
I probably said this last, I haven't finished it, I'm about three quarters of the way through it. The Happiness Hypothesis, Jonathan Haidt, H-A-I-D-T.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's quite outspoken
he
about
New York, so, yeah, New York University NYU. Guy? Yeah, 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 yeah.
Very interesting guy. He's on sort of Bill Maher, Galloway's podcast. Like,
yeah, does yeah, yeah. Does he do, is he the guy, he's done a bunch on social media and
yes.
kids?
That is his current, I don't want to say his current thing like it's flipping, but that's his, definitely his the body of work around research that he's been
right.
working, has been around that. The effect of the harm of social media on kids. And,
right.
And so
it's shocking stuff.
Crazy
yeah.
stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Self-harm and suicide rates for kids that were, you know, raised on a cell phone. But anyway, this book was a couple of years old now, and it talks about It's talks about how to achieve happiness. Like ultimately what as a species makes us happy and the pursuit of happiness versus pleasure and things like that. It's totally beyond my ability to fully comprehend, truthfully.
Yeah.
I didn't take psychology. Maybe I took psychology 11, but it's pretty interesting. It's about like how you know, we've got a limbic brain, our Neanderthal brain, and you got your neocortex, and you're trying to like, the neocortex is trying to manage the limbic brain from, you know, not turning back into a cave person or caveman or whatever. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. But that being said, totally. I think he does a thing on dopamine too.
Right? Oh God.
It's crazy. Yeah, anyway, fine. So that's, it's really interesting, but it's not, it doesn't keep you on the seat, you know, on the edge of your seat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's maybe why I haven't finished it. But.
In the last few years, this is another Adam question. What new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life? Since you've been on the show.
Okay. People who've worked closely with me, some of them would see me as a perfectionist. Other people were like, he's not a perfectionist at all. But there's things that I care deeply about and things that I'm happy to leave to somebody else. I've broadened that spectrum of things that I'm happy to leave to someone else. And I think that's a reflection of the role I have now. Like I just simply can't be too deep into things in the way that I might otherwise. Yeah, for sure. Right. So I've gotten more comfortable with saying, great. Even if in my mind, if I think it's really good, but not great. In the past, I would have said, what if we just like tinkered here, tinkered there. I am doing less of that. Maybe not as much, but maybe not working as hard at that as my staff would like me to. But I would say deferring and allowing our team to do their good work is something that I'm trying to spend more time doing.
Okay. And here's a Matt question. What you binge watching lately? Just kidding.
Lately, I haven't been watching anything lately, but the last one was Mobland. Everybody talks about that. Yeah. It was unbelievable. American Primeval. Have you seen that?
No.
Really?
No.
Oh, you'd like that.
Heard of that.
You'd
where?
Like that.
What is that on? Which
I need. I just finished Mobland last night.
Don't. Seriously?
Yeah.
So good, right?
It's pretty good.
So good. So good. American Primeval. It's the story of the American Midwest and this woman with her child trying to get across.
Wow.
It's really good. It's vicious. It gets pretty dark. But it's really good. If you like 1923 Yellowstone series, that's another one.
Yeah.
I just finished the second season.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. It's really
I heard good. That's the best of the Yellowstone. Like
1923?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all good, but I would say American Primeval, try that. If you like Mobland, if you like Yellowstone, or you like that
kind yeah.
of, it's not a mashup of those two by any means, but if you...
Yeah.
You probably...
I get what you mean.
You lit up.
Yeah. I'm excited. Yeah. What have you been listening to lately? I think you're into country last time we talked.
Yeah.
And actually, wasn't there just
I bet
a big...
you're listening to Morgan Wallen.
I was at the concert on Saturday night with my family.
I knew it. I knew you would be. Yeah, that's actually,
it was
that's
awesome.
Good though. Because I think about 2 years ago or so, you'd just gone to a concert with your kids and you were saying how awesome it was.
Exactly.
And now you're doing
Yeah, they agreed more. To come with us again.
Nice.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, it was great. It was awesome. Yeah, my kids are 19 and 22. So the fact that they still want to hang out with us and on a Saturday night is like mission accomplished to a degree.
Was that in Vancouver?
It was
that
in concert? Seattle.
Yeah, stuff, so. Right. Everybody was down
there. Yeah, there was a lot of people from Vancouver down there. It was really great. It was really great. Really, like a lot of families and it was really, really great. Positive. So I listened to country. That's sort of my go-to playlist. But I knew you were going to ask this, right? I assumed you were going to ask this. You haven't come up with any new questions.
No. You know what? We came up with a few and they kind of went over like a lead balloon.
Seriously, what were they? What were the crappy questions?
Oh, God. Yeah. And they were, I will take credit for those. They were all mine. What were they? I can't even recall. But yeah, it was just. Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
We had a backlash. Yeah, straight backlash.
So I was listening to a podcast the other day and this guy recommended... He was a really downer podcast, kind of like this one. No, I'm just kidding. And he's like, you know, how do you tell someone to enjoy their life this year? And he was talking about Trump and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And he's like, listen to these artists. And the first artist he listed was this woman named Eva Cassidy, and she's kind of like a Joni
Mitchell,
kind of.
Yeah.
If you go to Apple Music Essentials and listen to that, she does. It's really good. My kids don't really like it, which tells me it's probably not that cool, but she's incredibly talented. So I have that. I listen to that when I'm driving. It's very relaxing, but like this incredible talent that I'd never heard of before. So, anyway.
Wow. Eva Cassidy.
Yep.
New for me.
Nice.
Text me and tell me if you like it.
All right. I'm pissed, Daryl. Let me tell you why. At that recommendation. Last but not least, something that you've purchased for under $1,500 that's had a positive impact on your life.
Okay. So I knew you were going to ask this too.
Yeah.
The tickets for the concert were like...
More than that?
No, I was trying to run the numbers on that. Yeah.
They were a little more than that for four tickets by the time you had the conversion. But let's say it was $1,500. That I try to buy things that are experiences now, not
totally
things, right? So that was a great... Listen, it ended up being more than that with a hotel room and a t-shirt and a beer cozy or whatever.
It's worth that.
But it was awesome. So
anyway, yeah, I keep hearing about... I don't know. It's like an Instagram trend or something. I keep seeing the same video about how like kids, they remember all the family vacations.
Yeah.
That's like what stands out in their mind over the years. And so and my wife saw this. And so every time we're planning a vacation now, it's like we're spending way more. That's our justification is but to spend. It's like, I know. What else are you going to do?
There's so much consumerism now and I'm a consumer. But I don't know. I like spending money on that sort of stuff now. Because as we argued last time, maybe we didn't argue. It's hard. It sounds really like a real jerk to say this, but like to spend $1,500 on something that's going to change your life. Come on.
Yeah, we do have to up that. Yeah.
You said that last year. It's like $5,000 or something. But even then, it's like.
This is a pre-inflation question.
Yeah,
this
totally.
How's business for you guys?
Oh, fantastic.
Well, that's
are we
the end
still,
of the show.
Are we still on the. I mean,
actually been not a bad year.
Yeah, it's interesting. But I mean, we've over the years, we've worked a lot with investors and now, and I mean, we've always worked with end users and, you know, it's a lot of our clients that are families that are either moving up through the market, which mm-hmm. is a great time to do that. If you're, you know, say if you're in a townhouse and you want to go into the detached market, I mean, this is a perfect market for that, right?
Totally.
And yeah, and a lot of people downsizing as well. So kind of the same thing. So but yeah, people moving through the market and it's been a good year.
Yeah, you know what I was saying? I was talking to, it's tough out there, but yeah, I think grateful for our business right now. Yeah. That's for sure.
Tough because there's always people in the market.
Yeah. Right?
People getting married, people having kids, people having different housing utility needs. So there's mm-hmm. always movement, right? Your challenge is ensuring that you're giving them good counsel.
Yeah.
I suspect that's the biggest challenge right now. Like, I still want to be able to talk to them a year from now. And I want them to know that I help them make a good decision. Right?
Always. Yeah.
Yeah.
Work with people for life.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's interesting. There definitely are kind of the logjam sub markets that are tough to sell in right now where there's just a ton of inventory. So it's always kind of this, it's challenging in certain markets.
You know what actually is an interesting thing that it's a very rare experience. And I just had it. I was telling somebody this morning. So I have a client who has something under contract right now, and it is such a good deal that she's like almost backing out because she can't handle. Like she's like, there's got to be something wrong with this.
Oh, really?
Like the due diligence is like 2 to 3 times more intensive because we're trying to find out a problem. And I'm convinced at this point, at least, it's just the market. Like it's
really?
just motivated sellers.
What is it she's buying?
It's a condo.
Yeah.
It's a 2-bed condo. I don't want to say the submarket, but a 2-bed condo with a really nice view. And it is selling. It's cheaper than the last 1-bed that sold in there.
Really?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Amazing. So, yeah, it's like, she's like, well, they'll never accept this. And I'm not going to go above this. And it's like, accepted offer. And she's like, okay, how do I get out of this? Yeah, what have I got into? But you're like, this is an incredible deal. Like an incredible deal.
If there was a little tussle.
Yeah. Yeah.
A counter that she would feel good.
Right? Yeah. But it's like, when's the last time you can say you've worked with a buyer with that problem?
Wow.
Like the deal's too good.
Are you guys spending much time on the multiplex stuff? That's one of the notes I was making last night in anticipation of this. Like some of the that's one of the things that's very different in this market than a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like multiplexes didn't, I mean, of course they were around, but they weren't really around.
Yeah.
The degree to which that could impact the delivery of conventional housing, low rise townhouses and apartment high rises, like that'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
It's interesting. Burnaby too, there's a lot of the larger lots where people can do like 7 or 8 townhomes now.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of stuff like that we've kind of helped people pro forma, but it's,
it's still a tricky time, especially like, I mean, it's a tricky time for people that are not actually seasoned builders or, yes. or developers, yes. right? Because yes. it's hard to make sense of, you know, the margins are, you know, we talked about this at the beginning of the show, but this idea of like, okay, sometimes the margins have been big, the profit margins, yep. and sometimes they're tight, but it always comes down to like risk and reward, right? Because at the end of the day, if the market softens further and, you know, there's always somebody left holding the bag, right?
Yep.
So it's a lot of risk still in a lot of these markets. So
I would think people that are thinking about multiplex now, like construction costs have come off a bit,
yep.
right? Probably come off a little bit more, but I bet not so much in that side of the market because there's still a fair number of houses under construction in mm-hmm. your neighborhood of mine probably. Like totally. It feels, right? There's not a lot of holes being dug. There's not a lot of concrete being poured. So excavation costs and contact foot numbers for concrete are going down big time. But the guy that's building a multiplex or renovating a house,
yeah,
he or she's probably still quite busy. And so you haven't seen those construction costs come off yet, I don't think.
Totally.
You think that's true? Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm seeing a ton of them out there though now, like yeah. being built. It's
and, and listed. Sorry to.
Yeah. Well, actually, and I'm trying to think the one I was just thinking of is it's so dramatically larger than the house next to it that it's very jarring. It's kind of like the Franken Streets now. Like it's like there's all these different like it's you know it's 100%. Almost like the new Vancouver special or something
on steroids.
Yeah, on steroids, and I haven't seen one that I thought was really good looking yet. So
in my mind, what that means is that you're going to see a significant premium for a house that's mid block.
Totally.
With two nice houses on either side of it that were developed in the last 5 years that doesn't make economic sense to tear down. So if you have certainty over what your neighbors are like, both left and right and behind you on the lane, that house is going to sell for a premium relative to and a house that doesn't have that insulation around it.
Yeah. Interesting. Right? Yeah. That's smart.
Because you don't really... I mean, there's just so much uncertainty.
Yeah.
It's one thing to, it used to be that you'd buy house A and you liked the fact that house B beside it was a bit of a teardown because you knew somebody was going to build a nice house there and make the block nicer.
Yeah.
But now the inverse has happened. Someone's going to buy that and put 6 units on it and you're not going to have any, you're not going to be sunlight in your backyard anymore. Like these are things we haven't dealt with
before. A friend of mine made the same argument for denser single family neighborhoods as being like, he's like, these are going to end up being in a better situation just because like when you're dealing with like a whole say area in like whatever North Burnaby, where you've got a ton of 7,000 square foot lots, like it's coming and it's coming quick. Right.
Yep.
Meanwhile, if you're in like parts of the east side where it's like, you got a postage stamp that you can't do much more than what we're already doing with.
You need an assembly to be
able to. You need an assembly or whatever. Yeah, totally. Right. So it's, anything, it kind of maintains the single family character of the neighborhood.
Very interesting time. When we built our house, we built our house 19 years ago. And I remember how much trouble the building inspector put us through about our crawl space. So we had a crawl space, you know, so they made you put boulders in it.
Yeah.
So that they knew, so that you couldn't dig it out later and create additional livable area.
Yeah.
So, and now they're like throwing density at you, right? It's just amazing how.
Yeah.
How maybe the point there is how out of step government really is with the oscillation back and forth.
And, and also how the lag is so dramatic.
Yeah, totally. Well, I'm glad you guys are managing to keep a smile on your face in a challenging market. It's nice to see you guys again.
Yeah. No, well, thanks for coming down and likewise, I guess.
Thanks very much, guys.
All right. Take care.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with president of Townline, Daryl Simpson.
Yeah, really enjoyed that conversation with Daryl, Matt. Always great having him in the studio. Great conversations before and after we push record.
I cannot believe we've already done the intro and we can't go back. But after Daryl was on the show, friend of the show, Pete Reisner, sent over a video Daryl heading up a band called The Sellouts, where Pete Reisner was actually on keys. Turns out, Daryl Simpson has an incredible set of pipes.
So who knew that Pete knew how to tickle the ivories? And then Daryl comes out, just like he's like a straight.
YouTube,
we always knew he's a big country guy, but no, none
this
of
is
the
like
'80s.
This is like '80s kind of Def Leppard kind of songs. I don't know if he actually is doing Def Leppard, but it was kind of like that vibe, what, 80s rock, kind of pop rock, kind of, I guess.
Yeah, kind of like what you'd expect, like a rock cover band at like a club.
Almost. Yeah, but let's just put it this way. Daryl Simpson owns the stage. Maybe not,
good stage
not maybe not surprising, but he's confident up there and he pulls it off. It was crazy.
Yeah, great. The sellouts.
And it's on YouTube, the sellouts. Check it out.
Man, really great name. All right, Matt, what else do we got before we cut for the day?
What else do we have? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. That's our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the Live Wire. This is our weekly mailer where you get deal of the month, stats before anyone else, different types of stats, sales ratios. We're coming up on the fall market, so it's a good time to be tapped into not only the neighborhood you're interested in, but the price band, because you got to know what's going on in those submarkets. We also have, of course, if you want to get real dialed in, private client services.
Yeah, Matt, if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Just click buy with us. Best way to monitor the market. Best way to check out what's happening with inventory. Or actually, I should say, dial in on your sub-market, your really specific geographical area of interest, so you're not going to miss a listing. This is really the best way to do it. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And Matt, how can people find out more about what you're up to and get in touch with you?
Well, you can check out my LinkedIn page. No, just kidding. Call me anytime, 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And we also got that nonpartisan line, info at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, have a great week and we're back here next week with another great episode.
Take care.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.